If you're a facilities manager at a university, you know students rely on the cafeteria for breakfast, lunch, dinner, and the occasional late-night snack. So when a dishwasher breaks down and dirty plates pile up, the mess hall can turn messy in the blink of an eye. Enter Grainger. With over a million industrial-grade products and fast delivery, the product you need now is never far away. So you can turn that dishwasher back into a lean, clean washing machine. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Friday, December 20th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about our favorite TV shows of 2024. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at SlashFilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film staff writer Nina Starner.
Oh, hi. How are you?
Nina, we're recording all sorts of episodes wildly out of order this month. You and I have recorded several podcasts together that are going to go up next week for our end of the year coverage. A lot of our end of the year coverage is actually up in written form already at slashfilm.com. So we're just like in all sorts of mishmash nonsense on the timeline right now.
Yes, I feel like we've written and recorded these so out of order that I'm having trouble keeping track.
Yes, definitely. But yeah, so this is actually going to be, people are going to be able to listen to this before we get into our big, like, contentious sort of deep dive discussions with a bunch of other Slash Film folks. This one is going to be much more low key. It's just you and I talking about TV. So I thought it would be fun for us to go through our top 10 TV shows of the year. This is not a published list on Slash Film. This is just something that I thought that would just be a fun conversation to have, because as long as I've been talking to you in your time at Slash Film, it seems like you're just a big fan of TV and you watch a lot of stuff. And I watch a lot of stuff, and we talk about TV on the show a lot too. So I just thought it'd be an end of the year thing to do.
No, my TV is rarely off. Even, you know, during the workday, even like I'll just put on kind of something that like I've maybe seen before, or it doesn't need a ton of attention, just kind of for the noise of it all. But yeah, I watch more than a doctor would recommend in terms of the amount of TV, probably. But that's why I'm here.
Excellent. Okay. So I think what we're going to do is we're just going to go through our top 10s. We're going to start at number 10 and work our way up to one. And we were talking about this beforehand. I think the smartest play would be if one of us mentions a show that is higher on the other person's list, we're going to essentially table the conversation and come back to it when we get to the higher position and sort of give the show its flowers at that point. So why don't you kick things off and tell me what your number 10 show of 2024 was?
Perfect. My number 10 show, and I would be very happy but shocked if this was on your list, is High Potential. Are you familiar with High Potential?
I have heard of the show. I've heard good things about it. I have not had a chance to check it out yet. So tell me about it.
Sure. So I'm a huge Always Sunny fan. I live in Philly, so it's a legal requirement that I am. But I've been a fan of that show for years, and I love the cast. I think that they're just incredibly funny. I have this pipe dream where one day they'll kind of do a Christopher Guest thing and maybe Always Sunny ends, but the five of them do a different concept and just keep working together. So when I saw Caitlin Olsen had a new show coming out, I was immediately interested. And High Potential is, it's such a familiar formula. You know, it's the outsider who's not a cop ends up being better than them at their jobs and comes in and solves a bunch of cases, you know, starts working alongside them. The reason this particular entry into that kind of genre of show is so good is because of Caitlin Olsen. I mean, she's been doing phenomenal work as Sweet D for years. She's so good on Hacks, which I hope and suspect will come up again during this conversation. And High Potential is her vehicle. It is just completely her. I mean, she's got a great supporting cast with, you know, a bunch of like Carla from Scrubs. Judy Reyes is her name. I couldn't remember her last name. She's a supporting player. Taryn Killam is on there. She's got some really, really excellent. Daniel Sinjata, who has been in basically every network television show you've ever seen. So she's got really, really great supporting players, but the show comes down to whether or not you buy Caitlin Olsen as this, you know, irreverent yet brilliant person who can look at a crime scene and extrapolate all sorts of details from the smallest possible thing. It's really fun. It's following the formula of different case per week, but there's also an overarching case of she wants to find her, I believe, ex-husband or boyfriend. I don't remember if they were married, who is the father of her oldest child, who has been missing for years, because she's convinced, you know, he didn't just walk out, he must be missing. So there's kind of a larger through line as well as cases of the week. I think it's such a refreshing return to form for a procedural. I do love a case of the week procedural. I just find it oddly comforting that in 2024, we can get a network show that is this familiar and yet this good. It's funny. It has some unexpectedly emotional moments. And again, I mean, Caitlin Olsen is one of the best actresses we've got working in television today, and people have been sleeping on her for far too long.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, well, this is a great pick, and I can't wait for It's Always Sunny to come back. I know you mentioned that.
I know. I love it so much.
It's been a while. It's been too long. So my number 10, I'm going to immediately cheat, Nina. I'm going to put two shows on my number 10. This is the only time I'm going to do this. But they're kind of sort of thematically linked, and that is Abbott Elementary and What We Do in the Shadows. And the reason I say that they're linked is because these shows are like, these are my guys, my pals, my hanging out with friends shows, you know? I think Abbott hasn't been quite as amazing as it was right out of the gate for me, but when it's firing on all cylinders, that show is just perfect. And then when it's...
Yeah, the ringworm episode of Abbott this year had me losing my mind. I was laughing so hard.
Yeah, and then Shadows, I think, stumbled a little bit in season 5, but really pulled out of that in pretty magnificent fashion in its last season in season 6. And as we record this, I have not seen the series finale yet, but it has aired. And so I'm really excited to watch that and see how they decide to wrap this show up. So, Abbott and What We Do in the Shadows tied for my number 10. I don't know if you have any What We Do in the Shadows feelings or...
I love What We Do in the Shadows. I know the episode's not called Jackie Daytona, but the Jackie Daytona episode is one of the best 30 minutes of TV I've ever seen in my life, as is the Home Improvement show parody, which is like, I can't even think about it without laughing. I am actually really behind on What We Do in the Shadows, and I think I gave myself a little like room to be like, okay, I know it's coming to an end. I'm just going to binge season 6 when it's all available. So as you mentioned, it now is. Abbott is a show that barely missed the cut on my list just because I was trying to weigh my list in terms of comedy and drama, and I definitely skewed more towards comedy. So I think for the sake of balance, I kind of left it off, but I love Abbott. Again, a Philly show. There's some jokes that are so specific that I can't believe they are allowed to air outside of the greater Philadelphia region. Like there will be a reference to like Cisco playing a Philly venue in 2004, and I'll Google it. And he did play that venue in 2004. It's just the weirdest stuff. But yeah, I love Quinta Brunson. That whole cast is just 100 out of 10. Never not firing on all cylinders. It's a great pick. It's a great show. And What We Do in the Shadows, you know, my parents are still calling the Super Bowl Superb Owl. So if that means anything.
Excellent. Okay, so tell me your number 9.
My number 9 show is Fallout. How's Fallout looking for you?
I have not seen Fallout. I've heard great things about this. This has been like, I think an Emmy nominated show and like one of the most popular shows in Amazon's history, I think.
Yeah,
and
a huge big show deal for Amazon. Yeah, we're finally getting good video game adaptations, right?
Okay, so what'd you like about this one?
Yeah, between The Last of Us and this, I have never played the Fallout game. So this was kind of a left field pick for me personally. I get really anxious with video games that involve a lot of battle. I like ones where I can just run around and be a little guy, like Animal Crossing. But I kind of turned Fallout on just on a whim. I was like, oh, it's a new show. Everyone's talking about it. Probably good to know what the deal is for, you know, my job in writing about TV and movies. And I was so charmed by it. The production design is unbelievable. I mean, I know that the situation with Fallout is that everybody lives in different numbered vaults underground after an apparent apocalypse. And you kind of hone in on this first vault right away, which has Ella Purnell, who people might know from Yellow Jackets, Sweet Bitter. She just did a show called Sweet Pea that I'm also hoping to check out when I have some downtime this year. But Ella Purnell is the lead. She's great. She's got this incredibly expressive face with these huge, huge eyes that just she's able to say so much without saying very much at all. And Fallout is just, it's gory, it's gruesome, it's funny. Walton Goggins is absolutely crushing it. There's a dog on it, and I love the dog very much. And nothing bad has happened to the dog, so that's a plus in my book. But no, I really, really enjoyed the first season of Fallout. I thought that it made the story so accessible to people like me who haven't played the games and don't know much about it. And it really got me involved with the world to the point where I was Googling stuff from the games to learn more about it. I think it's definitely one of the best shows of the year, and it's a whole lot of fun. So I definitely recommend checking it out.
Excellent pick. All right. My number nine is The Bear, season three. And I have, I'm so curious what you make of this.
That's not on my list for a reason. So let's talk about it.
Okay. So I know this was an incredibly divisive season of TV. My argument is The Bear, even when it's not firing on all cylinders, is better than a lot of other shows. And I think,
yeah, I mean, this is a good, I can't really argue with that, I will say.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a lot to say about the way that this show in its third season just kind of ended and like set up a lot of stuff for seasons to come, or maybe a season to come. I'm not exactly sure what their plan is, but and I know that was like not satisfying for a lot of people, but I think the world kind of turned against The Bear in a huge way in season three. And I am still a defender of the show. I guess I am a defender now. Everyone was on board for the first two seasons, it seems like. But I'm a defender of the show. I think I trust Christopher Storer, the creator of the show, to and Joanna Callow to really land the plane in a big way in season four. And I think people are going to look back on season three through a much kinder lens when the story is completed. And I understand people being upset about it right now and sort of feeling unfulfilled or whatever. But I'm thinking back over the year in TV, and I was still, you know, as riveted with everything The Bear was doing in its third season as I've been from the beginning. And it's just sort of varying degrees, I guess. So what did you think about season three of The Bear?
You are definitely right that even when it's not as good as season two, which I think is indisputably the best season of The Bear, it's still better than a lot of other TV. But just to kind of clarify something that you were saying, it is going to continue in season four because they filmed season three and four back to back, probably because the cast is so busy that they kind of needed them to, you know, all be in the same place at the same time. But so that's definitely a big thing for me as I finished it. And I was like, well, this is half a season. It doesn't feel complete. And I understand that was, you know, just the release schedule and filming them back to back. But it really felt like Christopher Storer and his writing team only wrote half the story. And I did find that unsatisfying. I also did feel like season three leaned really hard on the guest stars after they were so successful in season two. So I think the reason they worked in season two is you've got this like little Olivia Colman jump scare complimentary at the end of my favorite episode of season two, Forks, which is the standalone Richie episode. And then also you've obviously got Fishes with Jamie Lee Curtis and John Mulaney and Sarah Paulson and Bob Odenkirk and all of these people. And I thought that really worked because it wasn't kind of pointing at the guest stars and going, hey, look. And the John Cena cameo felt like, hey, look, it's John Cena. He's on The Bear now. And I will admit that kind of just took me out of the world because I was like, oh, it's John Cena. It's not, I can't really look past that. So, I mean, I enjoyed watching it and I can't wait for season four. I would take a bullet for Io Adebiri, even though nobody is asking me to. But I feel like it is being judged harshly for being half a season, which is by design. But it also, I liked other shows better. And I also, this is not its fault. But every award season, I'm like, this is not a funny show. It's sometimes funny, but is it a comedy in the way that some like Abbott is? No. And I'm so tired of like a really funny show like Abbott or like some of the picks that I'm going to talk about on my list kind of getting overlooked because The Bear is not an hour long consistently. So it's, I'm using air quotes, a comedy. And I think I'm hitting fatigue on that personally, which I don't think I'm alone. Yeah.
I'm very aligned with you on that front. I'll say real quick in defense of the John Cena thing. I think, and I remember talking about this with Chris and Brad when we did a big spoiler-filled episode, sort of reacting to season three, that I think this season was so serious that the Fack brothers, provided some much-needed levity in season three, and I thought that John Cena worked into that pretty well. I mean, I guess your mileage may vary in terms of like whether or not you were taken out of the show by his appearance. And
yeah, I mean,
like
I love
people have, but
I love John Cena and I love that he keeps showing up in properties that I love. But I think that maybe, and then also bringing Olivia Colman back. I think if John Cena had been the only big guest star in season three, I might have had an easier time with it. But bringing Jamie Lee Curtis and Olivia Colman back for repeat performances and then tossing Cena in, I think maybe the combination of those things left me feeling a little sour.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Okay. So that's number 9. So tell me your number 8.
There's no way this is going to be on your list, so I'm psyched. This is my 8th pick is Tell Me Lies, which is an original show on Hulu that has not yet been renewed for a 3rd season, and I'm very much hoping that it does get renewed. It's based on a novel by Carol Lovering that came out a couple of years ago, and it is basically, it's a relatable premise, which is what if you were in college and you dated the worst human being alive? It's about this couple, Lucy and Steven, played by Grace Van Patten and Jackson White. And basically, Lucy just keeps making the same mistakes all over again with this guy, Steven, who in the book is definitely designed to be kind of your textbook sociopath. But I think what Jackson White is doing with his performance as Steven is giving him a little more nuance and making him less cartoonish. I think as a rare example, in many ways, the TV show takes the book and really elevates the material. The second season really built on the first season, and it also takes place in 2 timelines. So you've got a college timeline set in 2008, which is actually, to age myself, the year that I started college. And so it's really funny looking at what they're wearing, what they're listening to. And it's always exactly what we were wearing and listening to in 2008, 9, 10. And then there's another timeline in 2015 where you see the characters grown up and trying to grapple with everything that's happened to them. It's campy, it's dramatic, it's often silly, but I had a great time watching the second season. I have a couple friends who are also really into it, and we would text each other every Wednesday being like, oh my God, I can't believe this happened. And sort of like High Potential, I have been craving sort of a silly, soapy, campy drama in my life. And Tell Me Lies really fits the bill. It's absurd, but I recommend it.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, I was not familiar with this one at all. So that's a great pick there. All right, my number 8 is The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power, Season 2, which, again, I'm guessing is probably not on your list.
I haven't even watched it, so I would love to hear about it and why I should.
Well, I think it's a step up in a pretty big way from Season 1, which I liked. I love the Peter Jackson trilogy, the original trilogy. And I think I've said this before a bunch of different ways in the podcast, but I really think that this show does a great job of capturing the spirit of Tolkien and also providing some connective tissue to the Jackson movies that, as a fan of those films, I really connect to. And so the storytelling is like maybe a little shoddier because it takes place over multiple episodes in the season, and they're working on stuff that's in like appendices and whatever. And, you know, it's not exactly like the most direct adaptation you've ever seen. But I think there's some spectacular stuff in the show overall. I love a lot of these characters. And I think, like I said, Season 2 is just a really big step up. There are like a few of the characters that I like a lot get sidelined a little bit in this season. But for the most part, I think this is pretty spectacular fantasy storytelling in a time where I'm not getting my Game of Thrones fix from House of the Dragon.
I was going to say House of the Dragon Season 2 is really not on my list because...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know we're probably on the outside looking in on that, but, and I'm glad to hear that I have a compatriot in that
Well, again, I mean, that's a story of, you know, network interference, just briefly. Like, they cut it by 2 episodes. Could have been a really great season, but we got shafted. But yeah, I mean, yeah. I'm a huge fan of Peter Jackson's trilogy as well. I won't give up the extended versions of the DVDs. They are still on my shelf, partly because of the special features. But mm-hmm. I haven't checked out Rings of Power, largely because I heard the first season wasn't that good. But if you're telling me that Season 2 is going to kind of turn the car around, then this definitely makes me more willing and interested to maybe get through Season 1 a little bit and then be pleasantly rewarded.
Yeah, and I think it's not even really a struggle to get through Season 1. I think Morfydd Clark, who plays Galadriel, is fantastic. And there's some cool stuff that happens in the first season. There's some political subplots that are not like the most thrilling thing you'll ever see. But there are, I think, a lot of really great big moments. And in Season 2, there's a battle episode that I talked about on a previous episode of the show that I would personally put up against the best battle episodes on Game of Thrones, which is really saying something. So
that really is, because I mean, when you think about like Hardhome or Battle of the Bastards or any of those, like those are battles I can return to over and over again.
Yeah, this is like heavy duty stuff. So if you get a chance to check it out, I would love to know what you think about it. So that's Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power, Season 2. All right, tell me your number 7, Nina.
So I think we're going to hit some overlap from a very, very brief discussion we had before filming this. My 7th best show of the year is English Teacher. FX and Hulu collaboration. Yeah.
Yeah, this one is higher on my list, so I guess we can save it. So I guess my number 7 is Mr. and Mrs. Smith. Is this one on your list?
It's not, but it also kind of barely missed making my list. I loved this show. I love, Maya Erskine. I was like, what is her last name? I love her because I loved Pen 15 so much. Who doesn't love Donald Glover? Mr. and Mrs. Smith was so much fun. I had like a very enjoyable day and a half binging that and watching the two of them play against each other. But why did you put it on your list?
Well, yeah, those two performers are just, like you said, so fun to watch, even though the show itself is not always fun, because like hidden in this slick package of spy thrills and far-flung locations and just gorgeous settings and stuff, it's really a show about relationships and insecurity and neediness and trust and betrayal and sacrifice and all these things that are so relatable that, like, even if you've never been to the Riviera or fired a gun or whatever, I feel like there's just a lot of relatability going on in the show. And I was really just glued to the screen the whole time. So I love Donald Glover. I'm like a huge, huge, huge fan of his. Everything that he did with Atlanta was spectacular. And this is just such a cool follow-up to take something that on paper could have just been another boring rehash of a piece of intellectual property and actually imbue it with some personality and like make it feel like a real living, breathing thing. I think they did a great job of that in Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
I agree. And your relatability point is excellent, because now that I'm thinking about it, it feels so much less heightened than the movie, which I get, you know, it's just a difference in tone, but it feels like you can actually relate to these people, even though obviously I'm not doing any of that stuff in my day-to-day life.
Yep. Okay, yeah. So that's number 7. So now I guess let's move to your number 6. Is that right?
That should be right, yeah. Okay. So my number 6 is The Penguin, another show I didn't think I'd like and then ended up loving.
Okay, cool. Yeah, this one's not on my list because I have not gotten around to watching it at all. But tell me about this one.
So this is going to get me some heat, and I'm okay with that. Normally when I see a TV show or movie that's like, here's the backstory of this comic book character, I yawn pointedly and I look away. It's just not really my thing. But a friend of mine convinced me to watch The Penguin, and I sat down and I just put it on and I was so hooked. I did really like the Batman, and I liked Colin Farrell's performance in it. And I'm glad that we as a society have finally accepted that Colin Farrell is like one of the best actors that we have. He's so good. But this show really belongs to Kristen Milioti in a way that brings me such joy. People were like, oh, you know, it's the girl from Palm Springs. Come on, people. I've been here for years. She's the girl from the TGS Hates Women episode of 30 Rock. She is the mother from How I Met Your Mother. She has been working for years, and she's been putting out excellent, excellent work. And finally, The Penguin gave her a chance to really flex her dramatic chops, show how powerful she is, how she can command the screen. She plays, calling anyone the antagonist in The Penguin feels weird because all of the main characters are bad in some way, but she's basically, you know, the opposition to Colin Farrell's Oz Cobb, and she's spectacular. She's also wearing some of the best couture outfits I've seen on TV in a while, and that doesn't hurt, but watching the two of them share the screen is really electric. The show does a great job of not feeling like, oh, we're just doing a Batman show. It feels like it could exist completely independently of DC lore, and yet you can still tie it to Batman. So, you know, I think it's in some ways, in that specific way, it's maybe doing what Joker wanted to do back in 2019. Mm. But I really, really enjoyed The Penguin. I thought it was a really fun ride. There's kind of a little nugget at the end that suggests that maybe if they do another installment, that Catwoman might be joining the fray. So I'm curious to see if they continue it, if they change up the format and kind of focus on Kristen Milioti this time around, or whatever they choose to do next. I am definitely along for the ride because I had a great time with the show.
I'm a big Milioti fan, so I know that I have a great performance awaiting me.
Oh, I'm so jealous that you get to watch her do this for the first time. She's so good.
Okay, so my number 6 is Presumed Innocent, the Apple TV Plus show. Is this on your list?
No, but my parents love it.
Oh, is that a backhanded insult, Nina?
No, actually, they have pretty good taste in TV. It was what came to mind. But I know this is supposed to be very, very good. Do you want to sell me on it?
Well, it's prestige trash is what it is. And so it's just the highest form of just utter trash, utter garbage. It is like, it's a great sort of throwback 90s style thing. It was based on a book that was adapted into a movie in the 90s starring Harrison Ford. And it just has unhinged Jake Gyllenhaal, which I'm always here for, regardless of format, whether it's TVs, movies, whatever.
Yeah, when he takes the wheels off, you're always in for a good time.
Yeah, and the best part about his character in the show is that he's supposed to be a sort of buttoned up lawyer figure who is like this big time Chicago citizen who has a family, and he's just supposed to be like the most normal guy imaginable. And it seems like it's almost the character, but it also feels like Jake Gyllenhaal himself just can't play a normal person anymore.
And oh, so I do not think he can. No.
Yeah, there's just an interesting tension there, because it seems like this sort of insanity of this character is like bubbling under the surface, and it's almost hard to tell the distinction between where, like, what Gyllenhaal is doing as an actor and what he, what he's doing as a character, and then what he is like incapable of doing as an actor, where like he's not able to play just a normal dude anymore. And I don't want to like put him in a box or limit him or whatever. He's a great performer, but like,
right,
he's just so much more interesting, I guess is the better way to say it, when he is just completely off the leash. And that is definitely, it's just so fun to watch him go from this guy who is supposed to be this sort of straight-laced family man to making some of the decisions that he makes in the show, which are just completely deranged and like the actions of a true psychopath. So
incredible.
It's really great. And then Peter Sarsgaard gives like a bitter and petty and miserable performance in this. It's so fun to watch. And then he is teamed up with this guy from, I know him from The Handmaid's Tale, is the actor's name is Oti Fagbenle, who
he's so good.
He is delivering, I think, the most insane performance on any show that I watched this year. I'm sure there was something more deranged that I didn't dip into, but good God, Nina. Like, I think it's worth watching the show just to see the voice that he does as like the, I forget what he is, like the, he might be the DA or the assistant DA or something like that. He's like some figure who's sort of going up against Jake Gyllenhaal's character, who's been accused of murdering a mistress. And Oti Fagbenle, the voice that he does, like anybody who watches the show will never ever forget it, I think. So
I love garbage. I'm the first to admit it. I know with all certainty I'm the only person on the Slash Film staff who watches Vanderpump Rules. And if we'd been having this discussion at the same time last year, that would have been on my top 10 of the year without question. Okay. And that's a different podcast. But no, I thought Presumed Innocent was like really kind of straightforward. I didn't hear enough about it. So to hear that it's just off the wall bonkers makes me want to watch it way more. So you've sold me.
Yeah, it's really, really fun. All right, so I guess before we get into our top fives, let's take a quick break and then we'll be right back.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
All right, so tell me your number five show of the year, Nina.
My number five show of the year is Hacks. Do you have Hacks on your list?
I love Hacks so much. I did not put it on this list because I suspected that it might be on your list. And so I was hoping this would be the case. So tell me, let's see, Hacks season 3, I believe it was.
Season 3.
What did you think about this one?
I was so skeptical after season 2 ended, which I thought had a great ending where, Jean Smart's Deborah Vance tells Hannah Einbinder's Ava, like, I need you to quit working for me and go do your own thing because you're good enough at this point. And I kind of thought, well, I love this show, but maybe it's run its course. Maybe this is a perfect endpoint. Maybe we don't need a third season. I was definitely worried that we were doing that thing of it's popular, so we do more. I was so happy to be wrong about that. Season 3 of Hacks is so good. I love the kind of conflict of Ava doing a job she hates and kind of running back and forth between Deborah and the job she already has because she knows that she fires on all cylinders with Deborah. There's a line in the first episode that I think about constantly where Jean Smart, Deborah Vance rather, is picking out clothes and she tells the stylist that someone told her Dolce & Gabbana was problematic. And the stylist goes, oh, then we won't wear that woke queen. And she goes, no, that's not why I said it. I was just telling you about an annoying part of my day. And it's so good. Obviously, Jean Smart is brilliant. One of the funniest people on television. And not only is the finale of season three just extraordinary. I mean, the push and pull between Ava and Deborah in that finale is excellent. And then you've also got the Meg Stalter and Paul W. Downs showdown on the plane, which is extraordinary. Yes. But you also had like guest stars. This is where I'm going to praise guest stars coming in and improving the material. I thought Christina Hendricks' turn as a gay Republican was insanely good. And I love seeing Tony Goldwyn as kind of just a little, you know, catalyst for Deborah's maybe downfall. I loved the season of the show. I think that as long as Hacks wants to run, I will completely throw my skepticism to the wind. I trust them completely. Long live Hacks.
Yeah, I think it got a little saggy in the middle this season, but I think it finished so strong that I am like so jazzed to see what they do in season four, because it seemed like this whole season was just leading inevitably to that ending. And yeah. I'm just like, yes, give me
now
what you're
doing
next.
Now I like need season four. Yeah, the you wouldn't, I would, wouldn't you? Push and pull at that end. I can't wait to see where they take that.
Absolutely. All right. So my number five is Slow Horses. Have you seen this show?
I have not. I love that our lists are really different. This is actually perfect. So Please tell me more about Slow Horses.
Well, it's a spy show on Apple TV Plus. Gary Oldman plays just a slovenly former spy who has been put in charge of, they call it Slough House, which is this sort of like basically like the basement almost of MI5, the British
and
Secret
just
Service
quickly,
operation.
This is this the fourth season of Slow Horses? I know it's like well
it
underway. Okay.
Yes, yes. And I think this is one of the reasons I love the show is because it's so consistent. It just comes out. I think they shoot it in blocks where they do two seasons at a time. So there's just never a long break, you know, in between.
Right.
A lot of these big prestige shows, sometimes it's 2 or 3 years between seasons, and it's just insane. That's just not how TV is supposed to work. And Slow Horses
knows
that.
Looking at you, Severance.
Yeah, exactly. Slow Horses knows that and knows that they were able to just create the show in a really smart way and work it into everybody's schedules that, hey, this is the schedule, this is what we're doing. And The result is we all get a great season of television every year. And it's just a handful of episodes, nothing too long. It never really overstays its welcome. I binge the show, so I think that might, I definitely recommend that as the way of watching it. Week to week, I think, might be a little rough. Jacob and I talked about that earlier this year when we talked about the show and I presented an interview with the showrunner. But man, this is the most addictive show that I've seen in a long time. I love the mix of action and comedy. And I just think this is maybe another one that I could have put in my, like, I love my guys, my pals, my hanging out with friends type of show, because I love these characters so much.
Right.
But yeah, this show, it's straight up rules. So Slow Horses, Apple TV Plus, check it out.
Yeah, you're the 100th person to recommend it to me. So I got to get on it.
All right. So tell me your number four.
Let's stick with the animal motif. I picked Baby Reindeer for number four.
Oh,
okay. Is that on your list? Have you watched it?
It is not. I haven't watched it. I've heard what I've heard about Baby Reindeer is it's really good. It's kind of tough to watch. And so I never really got in the headspace where I was like, you know what? I'm ready for something that might be like deeply upsetting and kind of like characters who feel really messy.
Yeah.
I just never really got in that headspace this year. But tell me about it.
I completely understand that. And I think on a podcast that will probably come out after this one, we all talked about that with like The Apprentice. Like none of us are really in the headspace to watch The Apprentice, even if it's very good, because it's just none of us are there. But I watched Baby Reindeer really knowing nothing about it. I went in totally blind. And I'm glad that I did, even though it was extremely hard to watch. Certainly, if you have not seen Baby Reindeer and you're considering it, please check trigger warnings, check and make sure that, you know, it's going to be a comfortable watch for you in as much as it can be comfortable. It is meant to make you uncomfortable to a certain point. Richard Gadd is really, really excellent as the lead. And, you know, I know there's been some kind of legal kerfuffles over whether or not it's true and all of that. I have been kind of putting that on the back burner mentally and kind of separating the reality and the show. And the fact is, this is a staggeringly good miniseries that's made very well, directed beautifully, written beautifully, performed beautifully. And despite it being really hard and tackling difficult subject matter, rather, I think it's an essential watch in this year of television. I really would urge people to watch it if they feel that they can, just because I think the trajectory it takes and the way that Gad designed it is really something special. I'm curious to see what Gad does next. This is my first exposure to him as a performer and writer. So yeah, it's hard to say I recommend Baby Reindeer, but I do think it's an exceptionally good show, and my list would not have felt complete without it.
Okay. Yeah, this is definitely, I mean, arguably one of the biggest shows of 2024. So I'm glad it has some representation in this conversation. All right. So my number four is Say Nothing, the FX series that just came out not too long ago. Have you caught up with this one yet?
No, I haven't had a chance. Speaking of shows that I feel like this is the other, like, really, or one of the others, I guess there's a couple, one of the other really, really big ones of the year that everyone's talking about.
Yeah, so it's based on Patrick Radden Keefe's excellent nonfiction book from 2018, and it is about these multiple generations of people who are living in Northern Ireland and experiencing the period known as the Troubles, and it's about the disappearance, quote-unquote, the murder of a mother of 10 or 11 children, and the after effects and the fallout of that, and the political fallout from it. Also, it's about this group of essentially revolutionaries trying to fight off what they see as an invasion, and what that can do to people over decades. You know, these people who think they're going to be martyrs, and then they live long enough to see the battle take a different form. And having been baptized in the fire of a certain type of war, basically feeling left behind when the war switches to different tactics. And it's just a really interesting show that is based on real events and factors in the stories of real people. And I know that, like, some of the real people, similar to Baby Reindeer, I think some of the real people have, like, taken issue with the way that they're portrayed in the show or some of the events of the show. But I just think it's, like, a really, really excellent series that feels like punk rock, rock and roll, kind of like hell yeah, fist pumping energy for the first half of it, and then gets into, like, the grim realities of what going up against such an immovable force can result in the back half of the show. And then seeing the effects of these characters as they've aged, a lot of them as they've aged into, you know, decades beyond where they were when they started the show, and basically just being able to see the lines in their face, and there's so much you can read into just how they look and how they carry themselves. And they did an excellent job casting in the show. So the people who are the older versions of the younger characters just feel like true continuations of that same person instead of somebody who just happens to look a little bit like them or whatever. So yeah, this is just, like, one of the most tremendous TV shows that I saw on TV this year. It's called Say Nothing and is on Hulu right now. I'm really curious to see what you think about this one, Nina, because it's like a big show that is kind of tough to grapple with in some ways. So it's not necessarily, like, an easy watch or a fun watch all the time, but it does have such a cool blending of different tones and different styles and stuff that I think as a TV fan generally, I think you'll find a lot to appreciate about Say Nothing.
Well, when I saw Patrick Radden Keefe's name attached to it, I didn't think it was going to be kind of a light romp. That guy is not, with the utmost respect, known for his light romps. But, you know, I definitely, this is probably one that I'll get to, like, once the holidays are over and it's January and there's nothing to do, and it's cold and I just want to be, you know, watching TV under a blanket. I'm not saying it'll be comforting, but I'm saying, like, I want to give this show the time and energy it deserves. And I'm really, really excited to watch it.
Awesome. Okay, so let's get now into our top threes. We're getting close to the end here. So tell me your number three show of the year.
I don't think this could be more different from Say Nothing. My number three show of the year is Girls 5 Eva Season 3. I am the number one fan of Girls 5 Eva, I think, maybe in the world. And to the level that, like, if someone comes over to my house for dinner, I will do that thing that no one likes where I'm like, but just watch the pilot. The pilot's on. Oh, whoops, I turned it on. And then I kind of make people watch it. Don't come to my house for dinner. But Girls 5 Eva is a show with a weird kind of airing history. It started on Peacock as a Peacock original. And this was in the days before Peacock had popular stuff like Poker Face and The Traitors that kind of put the service more on the map. It was kind of like a wasteland. So I think that people didn't pay attention to Girls 5 Eva to the point where I don't think they knew it existed. And then for whatever reason, it ended up moving to Netflix for a brand new third season. And the first two seasons are also available there. And I highly recommend going back and watching the first two. But Girls 5 Eva is the funniest show I watched all year. And it's not close. I laughed so hard at one gag that I felt physically sick to my stomach. Like I could not stop laughing. The cast is Renee Lise Goldsberry, who most people probably know just from like the recording they did of Hamilton. I don't know who figured out that she should be playing a really like wild, crazy Jenna Maroney style diva, but I love whoever thought of that. Sarah Bareilles is so funny on this show. Also bless the person who figured out that she's hilarious. And then you have Busy Phillips and Paula Pell, who Paula Pell is one of the funniest people alive, and getting her, you know, as the lead on this show about four women in their 40s who were in a girl group when they were like in their late teens, and they try to get the group started again. And the reason it's called Girls 5 Eva is there were originally five of them, but the fifth member, Ashley Park, who is, you probably know from Emily in Paris, the show that is my nemesis, she died in a tragic infinity pool accident, I think is the way they explain it in season one. And so she occasionally comes back in flashbacks, but she's not on the show full time. And I can't say enough good things about this show. They managed to cram so many jokes into six short episodes. I mean, the third season opens with they're doing a residency in the Fort Worth area. And so they just write a song that's just like about all of the stuff in Fort Worth and perform it to a screaming crowd every night, but it's the worst song you've ever heard in your life. They're staying at the Marriott Divorced Dad Suitelets, where the vending machine is full of gifts for your kid's birthday. Like, and that's just two jokes from the pilot, just two, that just provide so many kind of dividends as they keep going. I need more people to watch this show so that we get another season, because while this season could be the final one and it wouldn't be like the story's incomplete, it's also sets up another season very nicely. So I need more Girls 5 Eva. I need more than just six episodes, but I had such a good time watching this. It's so funny. If you need to escape from the horrors and just watch something that's acted and crafted by extraordinarily funny people, then please. And also the soundtrack is like, I think largely written by both Sarah Bareilles and Tina Fey's husband, Jeff Richmond. So the songs are all better than they need to be. It's a perfect show.
Yes, I co-sign every single thing you just said. I caught up with the show. I watched all three seasons this year.
Yeah.
And really fell in love with it in a really big way. The only reason I didn't put it on my list is because I knew from talking to you on Slack that it was going to be represented on your list. So
yeah, exactly.
You can definitely consider this a joint pick from Nina and I. So I would say Girls 5 Eva is on Netflix right now, and it is... Yeah, I think it's like imperative that you watch it. I think it's, if you're listening to the show and you like funny stuff, I think at least give it a shot. You know, it's
Do you like laughter? Do you like laughing at stuff and feeling good? You should watch Girls 5 Eva. If there's a person who wouldn't like the show, I kind of don't want to know them. I think it's just funny and great, and most people would really enjoy it.
I've done this before, but I want to give another shout out to Sarah Bareilles, who, like, I was not familiar with your game, you know, like I knew who she was in terms of like her pop songs or whatever. But like, I think she's actually a really good dramatic actress. She can hold down the drama that is required of her in the show. And also she fits really well into this comedic ensemble. So I was just like very surprised and like pleasantly surprised with her abilities as an actor, which I think is not something that people really talk about very much when they talk about the show, because rightfully it's one of the funniest things you'll ever see on a streaming service or whatever. So it's like everybody is focused on the jokes and stuff, but I just think she's doing really good work in a myriad of ways on that show. So
yeah, because she's able to express, like, you know, she's the one who, she has a kid when the series first starts, and then she's worried, you know, should I have another? She's the one struggling with the most real life issues out of the core cast, because the rest of their problems, if you can call it that, are so heightened. And I think Dawn is the only one living like a normal, and I don't mean this in a bad way, kind of unremarkable life with her husband and kid on the way in New York City. And having that perspective against like Wiki, who is insane, or Busy Phillips, whose entire life is a sham, Summer. Like, I love having her kind of relatable normal self, but then she's also unhinged, like when she fasts for so long that she hallucinates Tina Fey playing Dolly Parton.
Yes. Oh my God, I forgot about that joke. That's great. That's the thing about the show. There's so many jokes that it's like so easy to forget about them.
Well, so it went to the 30 Rock school of jokes where it's almost like you have to pause the show because you're laughing so hard at one joke that you miss a second joke.
I'm guessing the rewatchability factor is probably pretty high with the show. I've only seen it. I've only gone through all the episodes once, but yeah, that's.
I have rewatched it because I have, again, made people watch it, and it, man, it stays just in the, you know, to go back to the pilot when Sarah Bareilles whispers that she had three Negronis because she doesn't know the origin of the word. I mean, that alone, if that doesn't hook you on the show, I don't really know what to tell you.
All right. So my number three is English Teacher. And this is a show that I've talked about on this podcast before. It's on FX on Hulu. It's another FX show. This is one of the funniest shows I saw this year. And I said nothing but great things about this when I first watched it. I think there are only 8 episodes in the first season.
And yeah, it's really
so short. Impressive. Yeah, it's so impressive as being like straight out of the gate. It knows exactly what it is. The comedy is so specific. These characters, these people that I had never seen before, are so like distinctive and immediately recognizable. And just like the character work that's going on there are great. Actually, Enrico Colantoni, who played Veronica Mars's dad, I'd seen him before, but he plays the principal of the school where the show takes place. But he was like the only familiar face to me. And I just immediately fell in love with these characters and want to spend as much time with them as possible. I do have to say before we even go any further that as of this morning, like as we're recording this morning, a piece in Vulture came out basically saying that there were some sexual assault allegations made against Brian Jordan Alvarez, who is the creator and star of the show. So I read that piece and like, I'm not going to really weigh in on that here, but I'll just say like, I find this whole situation to be obviously not ideal at all, but like very, very messy. And I don't really know how I feel about this show now. So I made this list before I read that article, and I just thought it would be disingenuous to take it off there because the show really worked for me. So I totally understand if people were like hesitant to catch up with the show if they've missed it because of this article or whatever. By the time you're listening to this, there could have been another couple of articles that have come out sort of going back and forth. Like the cycle could reach a point that I can't even predict at this point. But I just wanted to make people aware of that. And I'll link to that Vulture article in our show notes so you can read that if you want to. But
and I also want to say, like, the reporter who broke the story, E. Alex Jung from New York Magazine and Vulture, is a very, very thorough researcher. So obviously the mess of the story kind of comes from the people involved. But like, it was a very well kind of presented and researched account in terms of the journalism that went into it. But yeah, yeah. I also understand if you are hesitant to approach this show. And I think it's also important to note that some of the accusations also center around one of the show's co-stars, Stephanie Koenig, who plays Brian Jordan Alvarez's best friend on the show. But this show was all over everyone's best TV of the year list in 2024, and with good reason. I mean, it's a good show. It's very, very funny. The characters feel really, really lived in. It feels like you're dropped in the first episode to a group of people who already existed in time, which is something that I always think is really special with a new show. I also love Enrico Colantoni. I mean, Galaxy Quest has to be mentioned, but I'm a huge Veronica Mars fan, and Keith Mars is just an all-timer great TV character. So seeing
one of the best dads ever.
Best dads, him and Sandy Cohen, unbeatable. But I from the OC, should mention. But yeah, I love seeing him back on my screen. I have been recommending English Teacher to absolutely everybody as well. I again was very kind of struck by the article in Vulture today, and I think that, you know, sitting with that is an important thing to do. But it also needs to be said, this is a well-made show on basically every level. Like, in terms of a new comedy, it's hard to be good right out of the gate. And this show is good out of the gate.
Yes. Absolutely. And the soundtrack, I think, is just
it's so
absolutely
good.
Full of bangers. So excellent stuff top to bottom there. So that's English teacher, maybe a little bit more complicated than I would have liked for a conversation like this at the end of the year. But that's where we are right now. So, all right, let's see. Oh, that was my number three. That was your number seven. So now we're getting down to the bottom two. So tell me your number two show of the year.
My number two show is the third season of Industry, which is on HBO. Are you familiar with Industry?
Okay. So, Nina, I've heard nothing but great things about Industry. And so my wife and I watched season one, and I was like, you know, okay, this is all right, I guess. Like, I'm vibing with this a little bit. I really kind of don't like the messiness of these characters. I know I've used that word a lot this episode, but like the sort of like terrible decision making that these characters are constantly in the state of, like, let me do the worst, most destructive thing possible at any given moment, and that's what I'm going to do instead of, you know, making a right choice. So I was kind of frustrated with the characters in season one. I heard that it just continues to get better, and we started watching season two, and I think I got four episodes in, and I was like, you know what? I'm just not. It doesn't seem like there's a big jump in quality here. I feel more frustrated with these people than I do, you know, thrilled by watching them or whatever. So I'm just going to pull the ripcord and tap out. So I've heard great things about Industry season three from everyone who was telling me that the show overall was great, but I just couldn't connect with it. So I assume you're one of those people who was like, this show rules.
So I heard that it was great, and a really good friend of mine was like, really, really into it. And I thought, okay, let me give it a shot. I also think your mileage may vary in the same way that it did with Succession. And I will totally admit, I get kind of frustrated when people are like, I didn't like anyone on Succession, so I didn't watch it. Cause I'm like, but you're not, no one is asking you to look at the characters on Succession and say, yeah, I should be like them, or these are people that I should emulate in any way. I mean, nobody watched Breaking Bad and was like, I should be Walter White. Like, I don't understand how you can't always make that leap personally. I guess I have more patience for a group of really, really destructive, messy people on my TV screen, because Succession is one of my top shows in recorded history. And
yeah, weirdly, so I love Succession, but
I was actually going to ask what your take on Succession was. And I mean, Succession is also like, everyone's already rich, and so the striving isn't there of Industry, where everyone is desperately trying to be as wealthy as possible at the expense of absolutely everybody else. Industry is also funny in that it is like a business word salad show, where I would say I understand about 10 to 15% of what is going on with the logistics of the company at any given moment. And so I can also understand how, like, some people might be like, I don't understand what's going on. Like, I don't get it. But I'm going to vouch for season three here for a couple of reasons. First of all, season three brought on Kit Harington, which was a really smart thing to do, because I don't know if you're familiar with the HBO original, I'm calling it a movie, but it's only 45 minutes long, called 7 Days in Hell, which was the first time that I saw Kit Harington get to be funny.
Yes.
And there's a little bit of 7 Days in Hell in his character, Henry Muck, who is running this kind of nebulous, definitely shady, kind of eco-friendly company. And it's not super clear what they do, which is probably why, like, there are a lot of issues with it throughout the season. But his Henry is, you know, he comes from aristocratic blood. He is really spoiled. He is very childish. And Kit Harington gets to bring some of that kind of gleeful dumbness to this character that he first introduced to the world in 7 Days in Hell, which you should watch if you haven't. But Industry season three, so it brings on like new blood. It shakes it up with Kit Harington's Henry Muck, who's this big disruptor with all the characters and kind of, you know, messes up a lot of stuff for them. And then you also had this standalone episode with the character Rishi that has been described as the show's uncut gems, and I'm going to vouch for it and say that it is the show's homage to Uncut Gems, in which a guy makes you are yelling at the screen going, Rishi, stop it. Don't do the next thing you're going to do. But it's also like an astoundingly good hour of television. Even though it stressed me out, I would rewatch it because the craft is so extraordinary. All the performances are great. The ensemble of Industry is what I think makes it really special, is that I really feel like every performer is giving it 150%. And, you know, like, why can't I remember a single one of their names? But I mean, Harper and Yaz and Robert and all these characters, they feel lived in. They feel real. Even when I hate them, I can't stop watching them. I thought the third season of this show was a huge creative leap, and I think that it really worked. I also understand if you're like, I just hate all these people and I don't want them in my home on my screen. I get it.
Yeah.
But I also just am like this. I binged the first two seasons to basically prepare for season three's arrival. And I'm really glad that I did, because season three really paid off for me.
Okay, that's Industry. That is on Max. So now let's get into, I guess, my number two is Ripley, the show on Netflix. Did you see this one?
I missed Ripley. I know. I should be fired. This is another one I desperately need to watch because Andrew Scott is one of my favorite people on God's green earth.
Yeah, he's really the reason to watch this. Steven Zaillian, who is one of the most acclaimed screenwriters of the past 20 plus years, is the creative force behind the show. But Andrew Scott, who people will know as Hot Priest from Fleabag.
That's certainly how I know him, if I'm being honest. Of course, it's Hot Priest.
Yes, he is tremendous as the lead character. And this is the thing about the show that I love is, of course, his lead performance is just like off the charts. But it's also like the show is so... this is another one where, like, yes, it could just be seen on paper as like, oh yeah, let's trot out another Patricia Highsmith adaptation of this Ripley story that we've seen in multiple movies over the years, including very famously in 1999, The Talented Mr. Ripley, Matt Damon, Gwyneth Paltrow, Jude Law, like this sun-dappled Italian coastline, kind of sort of Amalfi Coast location, this like very distinctive movie that has a pretty firm place in the pop culture consciousness. It's so kind of
actually,
a bold move.
I have a question for you about that. I think something that I want to kind of hear you expand on, because I'm going to watch the show. It's already on my list, but is it so good because it merits kind of a new take on it, or because it's good in its own right? Like, are people kind of looking at it and going, well, we expected it to be bad because Talented Mr. Ripley is so good and this is a pleasant surprise, or does it stand on its own as well?
Yeah, I think it stands on its own.
Cool.
There are connections you could draw and sort of comparisons that you might make if you're like super familiar with that movie, but I had not seen that film in a long, long time. And I was just completely absorbed by this world. And the black and white cinematography here is another thing that on paper, again, would look like maybe a weird choice of like, this is Italy. Why would you?
Right. Why would you
zap all the color out of this world? But it really like thematically works with the black and white nature of what this character is doing and his ambition and his drive and his sociopathy, like all of this stuff swirls together in this wonderful collection, this mixture that is just incredibly entertaining, again, addictive TV. So I think the combination of like all of those things and Andrew Scott's performance and the fact that like this is a show about a guy who is a serial liar and he will do whatever he can to ingratiate himself into this rich community and try to climb that ladder and like, you know, get his bag, whatever he feels is deserved. And like, a lot of that feels really relevant to the period that we're living in right now, that this era of like grifters and con men and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I know that's been a theme or a through line through all of history, but it just feels especially relevant right this second. And so all of that is like a good way to watch the show, but maybe the biggest praise that I can give the show is that there are so many moments in this show where something happens and the Andrew Scott character has to think his way through what he's going to do next. And there's like a whole episode that is almost silent because you're just watching him go through the process of, oh my God, there's a body here. How do I get rid of this? What's the best way for me to go about it? And a lot of other shows would just sort of yada yada a certain aspect of it or like skip ahead or like use a montage or something. And this show does not do that. It like actively refuses to yada yada anything. It shows you
so it just takes up space and is like, no, we're gonna sit in this.
Yeah, and not in a way that feels like the bloat that happens with so many streaming shows where you're just like, oh my God, you're wasting time or whatever. It feels valid. It feels like this is an absolutely crucial thing to see how this character thinks through every single one of these decisions and like the step-by-step sort of grunt work of what goes into pulling off a con of this scale. I think it's just like what separates this version of the story from any other one that I've ever seen. And so there's so many things that I can say to recommend it, but that is like the thing that I think of first when I conjure Ripley in my mind. So it's a tremendous show and not enough people saw it. And it came out early in the year. And again, like Netflix, it kind of got buried, you know, it's just one of those things that feels like an endless, something being tossed into the endless sea of content or whatever. But I highly encourage people to check out this season because it's really spectacular stuff.
Yeah. You have given me a lot of picks that were already on my list. And now I have kind of a renewed drive to go check them out. So we'll definitely be
okay,
checking out.
So we've reached number one, Nina. Tell me what your number one show of the year is.
Well, speaking of shows that make a meal out of silence in a way that doesn't bloat the narrative, my number one is Shogun.
Hey, me too.
All right, let's talk about Shogun. This show is extraordinary. I've never seen anything quite like it. Anna Sawai is one of the best performers I've seen in the past couple of years on television. The way that she can absorb information and react and you see the wheels turn in her head is something that is just absolutely astonishing. Cosmo Jarvis is so good as Blackthorn. I went into Shogun pretty blind. I knew that it was based on a book. There'd been a mini series, you know, in the 80s or whatever, but I didn't know a whole lot about it. I knew that it was a mostly Japanese cast, which I was excited about because I was relieved, frankly, that it wasn't just a bunch of like randomly assembled people from Asian countries, but that they worked very, very hard to make it as authentic as possible. This show blew me away. I couldn't believe the scope, the scale. I thought it was incredible to look at, to hear, to watch. Yeah, Ben, what did you think of Shogun? I mean, obviously you liked it because it's number one on your list too.
Yeah, everything you just said. And like what they did with language in the show is just remarkable. And like the translation and like the little differences that go between the interpreter character played by Anna Sawai, like that, the small differences that she purposefully makes to move the story along or sort of like ingratiate a character with somebody else. And like Hironuki Sanada is just unreal in the show. He's been so good in this sort of like supporting, like, oh, that guy, I know that guy kind of space in pop culture, American pop culture for so long.
Right.
That seeing him elevated to this character who knows everything and is always two steps ahead of everybody else is just like such a sort of, it feels like a crowning achievement in his career, like a long awaited, like well-deserved thing.
Well, and I think it's important to note that Sonata also produced the show. And so I think that it's really exciting to see him not only take power as a performer, but have a lot of say in how the show functions creatively. Apparently he was very, very active as a producer in terms of how everything shook out. And I'm really impressed by the fact that he was able to wear so many hats on this production and wear all of them so well. And yeah, in terms of the language, I read an article that I believe was actually also on Vulture about the way that the translations were basically put into kind of an older kind of dialect of Japanese, but then like moved back and forth for the, it's fascinating. The amount of homework that went into this show is really astounding, but it also feels effortless somehow, which I don't understand how they did that.
Yeah. And like the palace intrigue aspect of it, I loved, like, you know, I alluded to sort of not getting my Game of Thrones fix from House of the Dragon. And I really got it from Shogun this year, like even more than Rings of Power, like that sort of backstabbing and betrayal and like, you know, striving for power and all of this kind of stuff, like all of those themes and ideas are explored so wonderfully in the show. And so the only downside that I can think of about Shogun is that it's coming back for another season and I just don't know what they're going to do. And it could be an upside, but I'm just like so sort of on the edge of my seat about like, oh God, I feel like this is a bad idea. I don't know what you guys are doing.
Yeah, I mean, but, I trust the creative team because I think obviously they proved that they're geniuses, but it just felt like such a closed loop to me in such a beautiful way, especially with the characters that I was kind of most interested in watching. Although I can't even really say I wasn't interested in everyone's journey. Even the, you know, wife assigned to Blackthorn, whose husband mm-hmm. was killed, it had a fascinating arc throughout the season. But Mariko and Blackthorn's stories, to my mind, are over. And that would be Anna Sawai and Cosmo Jarvis. And I think that those two performers in particular, and particularly their chemistry together, because the majority of Blackthorn's time on screen is spent in the presence of Lady Mariko because she is his translator. And watching the two of them interact and you know, just deal with each other on screen coming from these two different worlds was so fascinating to mm-hmm. me. So I am very hesitant. And in terms of Blackthorn, I also want to say that I think the show did an admirable job of the whole, like, white guy discovers new culture shtick. Like, that could have been really mm-hmm. hokey and bad, but I think that the way that they showed Blackthorn kind of grappling with customs that were so unfamiliar to him, it made him look foolish 99.9% of the time. And I think that was a really smart move on the show's part to be like, no, this guy has no idea what he's doing. Everyone else is totally in command of their stuff, and he is just kind of a bumbling fool. And I just thought that was a really nice touch of like the outsider coming in, like, no, he's not a savior. He's good at some stuff, but also he has no clue what he's doing.
Yeah. I've not seen the original miniseries, but from what I understand, that's kind of what the original, like, miniseries from the 80s was, where it kind of centered the white guy perspective a little bit more. So yeah, I 100% agree that I'm so glad they didn't do that. And yeah, like the Cosmo Jarvis of it all, like, I don't think I had really seen him in much, but he did such a great job. Like, I think when I first saw him,
phenomenal.
I was like,
yeah,
what the hell is this guy doing? He's just doing like a weird Tom Hardy impression, you know, but like there's something where he sort of leaned into, he was not afraid to look foolish. Whereas like, I think a lot of other actors, especially right now where the industry is so tenuous, would want to pull their punches a little bit, would want to like come out of a show like this being like, hey, I'm the hero. I'm the good guy. I'm the person who, like, look at this moment that I can put on my reel where I look like the hero so I can get another job. And he was just like, this is a fearless performance from him where it feels like, I don't care about any of that. I just want to do whatever this show requires of me. So shout out to him for that.
And in that vein, it feels like he really seeded the floor in terms of, let's put this on an acting reel, to Anna Sawai, who I hope I see her in everything from now on. I mean, she speaks Japanese and English fluently, and so there's no excuse to cast her in everything. But I believe she actually speaks more languages than that, because I think she might actually be a genius. But she's one of the most striking and talented performers I've seen in quite some time. And I didn't watch this show until after she won the Emmy. And I went back and I watched her acceptance speech because I was like retroactively cheering that she won. And yeah, so I have definitely been talking about Shogun a lot. It's a show that surprised me in all the best ways. I am very nervous about a second season, as I think you are, but we will always have this perfect first season, which I think is unimpeachably good.
Yes, and Anna Sawai is like the true MVP of the show, but I also want to give a shout out to Tadanobu Asano, who played Yabushige, who was like just a fun piece of shit character, you know, just this guy who's like constantly scheming and kind of lying and just sort of bumbling his way through, but also seems to have like a heart of gold is maybe a little too strong, but like more going on under the surface than you would imagine. So
yeah, he was always surprising me. I loved spending time with these characters, even when they were doing things that turned my stomach. This show was incredible.
Excellent. All right. Well, I think we've done it, Nina. Do you want to recap your list for everybody? Just go 10 to 1.
Absolutely. So number 10 was High Potential, which is on ABC. Number 9, Fallout, which is on Amazon. Tell Me Lies was number 8, which is on Hulu. Number 7 was English Teacher, which is FX on Hulu. Number 6 was The Penguin, which is available on Max. Number 5 was Hacks, also available on Max. Number 4 was Baby Reindeer, which is on Netflix. Number 3 was Girls 5 Eva, which is also on Netflix. Number 2 was Industry, which is on Max. And number 1 was on Shogun, which is on FX Hulu.
Excellent. Mine was, I cheated with number 10 with Abbott Elementary and What We Do in the Shadows, both of which I think you could technically watch on Disney Plus right now, because they're both like sort of the FX
Hulu
version. And then there's the, and Hulu as well. My number 9 was The Bear Season 3, which is also FX on Hulu. Number 8 was Lord of the Rings, Rings of Power Season 2 on Amazon Prime Video. Number 7 was Mr. and Mrs. Smith, also on Amazon Prime Video. Number 6 was Presumed Innocent on Apple TV Plus. Number 5, Slow Horses on Apple TV Plus. Number 4, Say Nothing on FX on Hulu. Number 3, English Teacher, FX on Hulu. Number 2, Ripley, which is on Netflix. And number 1 was Shogun, which is on FX on Hulu. All right, Nina, we did it. This was a long episode, but really great stuff. And I think this was a pretty good year for TV, as evidenced by like the fact that there was not a ton of crossover on our list. So
yeah, and there are also shows I haven't checked out that I should mention, like Somebody Somewhere. And like there's a ton of shows that are on a lot of other top 10 lists that I think are well worth everyone's time.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a couple that I still really want to watch. Like I need to catch up with Bad Sister season 2.
Me too. And, yeah. and Shrinking. And yeah. There's, yeah.
I heard great things about Black Doves, which I haven't gotten to yet. So yeah, lots of great stuff. Too much TV out there, but these were some of our favorites. So
exactly.
You can find more about a lot of the shows that we mentioned on today's show at slashfilm.com. I will try to link to a couple things in the show notes. Slash Film Daily is typically published every weekday, bringing the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thanks so much for listening, and we will talk to you all next week.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.